Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Authentic Messengers. My name is Catherine Van Wetter and I will be your host today. Every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, I have been interviewing different authors and inspirational leaders who have contributed to our book, Life Sparks. All of these interviews have been archived, so if you miss one, you can go to www.blogtalk.com/authenticmessengers.com. Please also go to our Facebook page, Authentic Messengers, and give us a thumbs up. Any kind of comments are always welcomed. And if you know of anyone who you think would like to be on our show, please give us their information and we can contact them. Today, I'm so excited to be interviewing a friend and dear creative person, Deborah Kopp-Chapin, who has been developing touch drawings since it came to her as an inspiration in 1974. She teaches a process at conferences and graduate programs internationally. Deborah is creator of Soul Cards 1 and 2 and 5 Soul Touch Coloring Journals. She is the author of Drawing Out Your Soul and the Touch Drawing Facilitator Workbook. Deborah has been interpretive artist at several conferences, including the Paramount of the World's Religions. She holds a BFA from Cooper Union and is an ordained minister of incarnational spirituality. Deborah has served on the board of the International Expressive Art Therapy Association and is founding director of the Center for Touch Drawing. Hello, Deborah. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Hi, Catherine. It's great to talk with you. Boy, that got me tired.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wow. And she's a friend. How do you ever get all that you get into what you do? I've been so amazed with watching you over the years as I've seen you at different conferences doing your drawing. And as we're talking, one thing I would love to have you explore and let our audience know, how is it that you actually got into what you've termed touch drawing?
I'm happy to share that story. It's as much as I've shared it over and over, it's always the first time. So, as a young person, I wanted to be an artist. I went to art school in New York City. And I found actually in those years in art school, the early 70s, it was a somewhat alienating experience of getting further and further away from what my those core impulses I had started out with in my life. And I think these are the challenges many of us find when we start going into a field that we have a passion for. We can also, all kinds of other factors can come into it that take us away from that core. And for me, creating images was a very soulful, direct, expressive images was something that I just had in me, especially in my teenage years. And in art school in New York, though, it was all about abstraction, conceptualism, just flat panels of color and a string hanging on the wall and things like that. So there was a mystique around all of this, and it's almost like a different kind of creative field. But that core impulse to create images that express my soul got somewhat squelched in a way by the more conceptual approach. And by my last year, something inside of me was searching to get back in touch with that real thing, even though it was not very cool. And so there were a series of behind-the-scenes little moments where I was reconnecting with that part of myself that culminated. It didn't come out of nowhere. They culminated in the moments where touch drawing came to me very, very playfully, but it didn't come by accident, as some people have described it. It really was a response from the universe to a question that I was asking, to a search that I had. So in my last day of my last year in school, I was helping a friend who was actually serving a role of being a consciousness catalyst for me. And so, you know, these people come into our lives, who knows, you know, how that's orchestrated from the universe. But I hadn't spent much time in the print shop. He asked me to help clean up. And when I saw this piece of glass with ink in it, instead of, and I was going to wipe it with a paper towel, I moved my hands playfully on the back of the paper towel and picked them up. It was laid over ink, so everywhere my fingertips moved, a mark was formed on the other side. So it's like a beautiful natural gesture on the paper. I picked it up and looked at the other side and saw these very organic, alive, and natural lines that were like a transmission of the movement of my hands onto the paper. And that moment was also an energetic opening. So I think it's, if you, you know, like my fingertips just opening to that direct expression seemed to unplug something, and I was just filled with this energy. So it was way more than just discovering a technique. It was this energetic moment of getting unplugged. And then I started laughing hysterically with all that energy and picking up more paper towels from the floor and moving my hands on the paper towels over and over. And gradually they turned from just natural organic lines into little faces and characters. But this was all in you know, maybe I said gradually over maybe 20 minutes of drawing or something. I have no idea about the time, but just many, many paper towels I began to realize I could create images, like project my inner being onto the paper in an image. And I did these silly little faces, but they felt so alive to me. So as much as it was a very playful and pure childlike experience, I recognized that actually that in itself was very profound, and that this process of such direct, pure expression was being given to me. It felt like it was coming from some other dimension. I didn't even have that word in my lingo at that time. The language I think I could find in myself is that it seemed to come from outside of time. There was like this someplace where it was waiting, and it came into me in this moment. And it was not just for myself. It was a human, cultural, evolutionary, creative process. And it had been dropped into me, and I was supposed to share it. It was just sort of a knowing about that, and that it was to match where we're going in the future as a creative process in human, you know, consciousness evolution. This process could meet us where we are in the future, and it had been dropped into me to share it with others. And I didn't really have words for it, but it was a sort of a knowing in those few intense minutes of touch drawing. I didn't call it touch drawing. I didn't have a name for it. Yeah.
Well, it reminds me, you mentioned the word transmission, and I think about how our palms of our hands are like hearts, and the healing power of our hands and subsequent fingertips. So thinking about the transmission and how you opened up those beautiful channels, 10 little channels, or 5, 4, 8, depending on how many of your fingers you use. Did you use your imagination to image in the images that came out, or did you just allow whatever source it was to run through you?
Yeah, I just always pretty much allow what wants to come through. I really start with a sense of what are my body sensations in the moment? And my drawings have changed, but I would say that's pretty much consistently how I approach it, which doesn't mean it isn't possible to work with imagination more in a more controlled manner, but there's a sense of just opening to the unknown, starting with a subtle, it's a felt sense for me. It's not so much seeing something. I start with a felt sense in my body. That's what I did then, you know, like, ha-ha, I feel like I'm laughing, and I have this feeling of joy, and my hands made this funny little happy face. You know, that's simple and childlike in the first ones, but that's pulse still when I sit down to draw. What am I feeling right in this moment? And it's as my body attunes to more subtle levels, then the images can express more articulate, more articulately from the subtle levels. But it's still right through body sensation.
So you mentioned that your process had changed, and is that in a way that you have become more in tune with the subtle impulses and allowing yourself, or how is it that your process has changed?
Well, no, I'd say in a certain way it hasn't. It's always, what do I feel right now? That's the core part mm-hmm. that's the same, but it's become more refined, more articulate of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been an evolution within a very simple, basic modality. But I'm a sort of a persistent person, and you know, just keep doing the same thing over and over. I'm not really looking for, let me find something new to do. I'm looking to go deeper. I'm looking to try and build a deepening, you know, language and presence. How much fuller presence can come through? How much more finally can I sense, you know, whatever is in the field of the moment? So I apply the process in different ways, in like a broad range of ways. You refer to seeing me draw at conferences. One of the ways I have applied it, sort of to give myself a kind of collaborative stimulation, is that I love to draw during conferences when inspirational speakers are presenting or musicians. And it's like listening to their content, feeling their presence, the body of work that they represent, I draw in that field. So that comes into me, I sense it, and then I translate it into images. I've just, my most recent project right now that I'm just completing is putting online a retrospective of touch drawings that I've done at the Women of Wisdom Conference as far back as 1995. So that's what I mean about this persistence. I've missed a handful of years in all those years, but I've just put online this whole body of work, and I'm about to put it out tomorrow for International Women's Day. I've been aiming to get it done and then, you know, post it online and on my website for International Women's Day. So there I went to this conference. It's an example that's explored aspects of women's spirituality over so many years. And there's always new images. It's like infinite. But they always come from that same place of, what am I sensing in this moment, in this field, right now? That's what's simple and the same.
Well, many things come up. I love this conversation because it's just like you're sensing in, and how that opens up so many possibilities. Talking to you, I'm sensing in, and so many questions and inquiries are coming forward. In the arena or energetics that we're in right now, in lieu of what's happening within the United States and what's happening globally, one wondering how your artwork has shifted in regards to the whole arena of polarity.
I
don't
question.
Talk about politics per se, but the polarity and the pulling apart and the angst, et cetera. And then also the Women's Day, the Remembrance Day. I wondered if you could address both of those questions. One, how you're picking up energetically with what's happening.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's in terms, let's see, I do feel that it's a time where we have to draw upon our own deeper resources just to manage to hold ourselves together. So, and the power of creative processes is that there's certain types of creative processes where the focus is on sourcing, you know, what do you feel in the moment? And touch drawing is one of those kinds of processes. What do you feel and expressing from your soul very directly? And I feel like all of those kinds of processes that can happen through movement, through singing, strengthens our connection to something that's timeless, that, you know, is bigger than what's happening, to help us renew and gain some strength to, you know, protect us from getting sort of torn apart and frazzled and overwhelmed and depressed and all of those things. What I have found actually in my personal life, a leading edge creative process in my own life right now is actually doing music. And I have been creating sound baths. And the day after the election, when there was quite a bit of falling apartness emotionally, and our local healing center said that, you know, they were going to be there if anyone wanted to come by just to be together, healing circles. And I offered to come with my crystal bowls and play. And officially, that was maybe to offer for other people, but what it did for me to play and to sing and really have to draw more deeply upon my soul resources and the deeper connection to the powers of the earth, I found all of that happening. I found myself able to tap, almost like forced into tapping more deeply. So that was, I guess, one blessing we can take from things when they get harder is that if our response can be to go deeper in ourselves, then we are gaining something out of these challenging times. And so I've been continuing to offer a monthly, what I call a sacred sound bath. And each time, I'm doing one again tomorrow night, each time I feel like, oh, great. Oh, I got to tap more deeply. This is helping me. You know, it helps. Having other people to serve can draw it out of ourselves also. So creating just for ourselves, there's so much focus on creativity to do it for ourselves. But actually, I find when I'm doing it on behalf of someone else, for other people in some way, and this goes for my drawing as well, it calls forth more than just doing it for myself. Mm-hmm. Another way that I have been drawing is, you know, there's a young man who died recently from a medical situation unexpectedly, and I had this impulse to draw, you know, for him when he was in his process, and to be able to tap those deeper levels and then to be able to offer that as a gift to the family. There's, again, another way of creating in service, and that always seems to call forth the best in me because I'm not just doing it for myself, and it draws more out of me. I'm able to focus in a stronger way. So it's another reason I do like to draw at conferences. Again, I'm part of a larger collective. I'm serving something larger. So I'm always trying to put myself in those kind of settings where I'm not just working for myself.
Well, and to attest, one thing I do know about you is that you do keep getting up and you keep going forward. And I can personally attest to that, seeing you with all the different projects you've done. There is that relentless energy and perseverance that is so much bigger than you. I mean, I applaud you for that. It's just because you're such a beautiful signature energetically and also with your beautiful artwork to what we look forward to. I know at least in the different venues I've been in with you. So thank you. You're like the ever ready battery. The bunny that keeps getting
Someone else used that with that little bunny that just keeps going. But going to those, doing things like that keep me going. That's the thing. They give me energy. So, I mean, you know, it's that long haul. Perseverance, that's my word. And, you know, it's such a long haul, and really for all the time I've been at it, not a lot of support, not really obvious ways to share what I do. I mean, there's real ongoing challenges to figure out how to do what I do, but I'm clear that I can't stop, and I'll keep doing it even if it doesn't make sense, even if I don't know what to do with it, even if no one does end up seeing it, I do have to stay with it. I'm sort of at a clearer place of perceiving and committing around that lately. Yeah.
And part of what I hear is this, similar to you taking on this style of artwork, it was something so much bigger than you. And how many times does one find themselves doing something that on all outward appearances does not make sense necessarily, but there's that drive to continue. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you
absolutely.
For that. And it doesn't go unnoticed.
Thank you.
It doesn't go unnoticed. And in regards to the women's, remember the Day of Remembrance.
It's International Women's. Well, I don't know, even not that aware of it. It's International Women's Day. It's an annual day, I think, of empowerment for women all over the world. I do know that this year there are women who are looking at maybe not going into work, but that's a very specific, I think, political statement this year in this country, kind of like the Women's March. But this is just an ongoing annual day to take note of women's rights all over the world. And when I was putting this retrospective together for the 25th anniversary of the Women of Wisdom Conference, and then I realized, oh, International Women's Day is coming up. Great, I'll have that be my deadline. That's sort of how I do things. It's kind of spontaneous, perfect, good timing. I'll just try and get it done just in time for that, which is a nice excuse to send it out to my mailing list and post it sort of as a celebration of the feminine to just be passed around and experienced on that day.
Mm. So how is your artwork
tomorrow?
And you'll get her done. How has your artwork shifted over the last several years with the theme of the women's wisdom? I'm sure you've noticed shifts in, or if you can explain what your artwork shows you with the different images.
Yeah. Interesting to put this retrospective together. I first did I had a partial one on my website, but I had stopped doing it after 2008, so I was quite a number of years behind. And I put together a slideshow for the Women of Wisdom Conference this year for the 25th anniversary, so I dug out the images from all these years, going back to 1995. And what's the change? In a certain way, when I look back to the early drawings, it's not that different, and yet every image is different. It's such an interesting combination of the same and different. You know, there's a language, a soul language, that has not particularly changed. I think it's grown in subtlety, and the images may look more embodied and substantiated now, even when they're quick, spontaneous images. I think there's a fuller, a more fully embodied quality to them, and yet they're also expressing more subtle levels. So I guess it's just become more, more articulate and refined and deeper, but it's the same language of soul, you know. So if I look back, I mean, some people might have abrupt changes in their art style over years. Oh, that was this period, and that was that period. And I would say there really has never been an abrupt change, like, well, I'm going to stop this, I'm going to do this now. You know, it's just not even a thought form to me. I just go into the moment, and I do what I do over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it evolves and it deepens. But that's the opportunity for anyone who goes to see that retrospective. You can look for yourself. Wow, look at 1995 and look at 2017, and what do you think, you know? People recognize when they see some little image of mine from somewhere, they seem to recognize it. And I'm not sure, like you said, a signature. There is some signature, I think that we all have in our being that does show through my touch drawings. It's consistent.
You do have a unique, I do know your work when I see it. It does have, even if it's very subtle, it has the uniqueness of it. Curious, with the times that so many of us are faced with now, how can creativity help for those who are aware to know that things are happening, or even those who are not? How can creativity help us during these times?
Well, as I referred to how it kind of helped me survive that really difficult day after the election, I do think that creativity can be a spiritual practice and a way to access deeper levels of our soul, of our wholeness, of who we are. And any ways we're able to do that, I think that helps us to find our way, you know, to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are so many causes. There are so many causes. It's completely overwhelming. Every day there's another
mm-hmm.
melodrama. I'm tracking that, you know. And it's the ability, it gives us a chance to go into the timeless, you know, sort of counterbalance
mm-hmm.
that. And to get, I feel like, a stronger anchoring in our deeper timeless soul. And it can help, you know, creative expression when we have stress to release. You know, if we let ourselves get unplugged, you know, let that pour out through some kind of creative process. It can be through singing, it can be through dancing, it can be through drawing, but releasing the gunk, you know, so the life force and energy can flow through us, will empower and energize us in whatever we choose to do in terms of some kind of activism or social service, the other aspects. But I think they, creative process helps take us to our source place, and so we can act from that place more clearly.
Yeah, as you're talking, it brought on a whole new depth of awareness of how right now it feels like there's so much fragmentation that leads to manipulation and just anxiety and fear. And I kid and say, save your cortisol because it's going to shift within a minute, you know, instead of feeling like the cortisol, your stress hormone's going off all the time. And with that being said, how does one learn to know, take a breath, do your drawing, do your singing, to move out of that paradigm or out of that field of feeling like a pinball machine in some ways of just bouncing around at the end of the day being exhausted? So it's just the way you explained it brought up clarity of the importance of tapping in, again, the fingers and the feet and the toes and the belly and the mouth, all of that too. I wondered if you could express more with what you're saying with what I just said as well.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the body. You know, all these creative processes, we're using our body, fingers, mouth, belly, feet, and that does the body awareness like a mindfulness practice. You know, creative practices bring us to awareness of our body sensations. And, I mean, that's where touch drawing as a visual practice, inward focused, not outward focused. So it's not like sitting and trying to draw a vase. It's what sensations am I feeling right now in my body? Oh, there's a constriction in my belly. I'm going to, what does that constriction in my belly feel like? I'm going to move the shapes of that, you know, out almost like a dance through my hands.
Mm-hmm.
My hands are dancing on the paper in the shapes of that feeling in my belly. And then that might be the source for an image that I don't expect it to be. Once I look at it, I'll say, gee, that looks like a tree, and I'll turn it into a tree, or it might just remain an energy movement drawing. But the starting point is, what am I feeling in my body right now? So if there's stress, you draw the stress, and in drawing it, you're opening this channel that it can pour out of, and, you know, you don't stay stuck in it. It starts moving and shifting, and each in the process of touch drawing, and I think it's true of many of the more spontaneous, improvisational, creative processes, you know, you do the, but in touch drawing is so powerful as a visual art form. It's more like a movement process. So I will move a feeling out of my belly through my fingers, and that drawing might take a minute. And I'll lay it aside, and then I'll say, okay, now what do I feel now? And I'll go, ooh, it's kind of a jagged feeling in the side of my chest. All right, I'll move that jagged feeling in the side of my chest. And each drawing, I lay that aside. What do I feel now? And I, each drawing is like the stepping stone. All I need to know is the moment, but then I lay it aside and I do another and another. So every drawing is a record of a moment and takes me to the next place. So there's an actual inner energetic transformational process happening step by step, and in response to the moment. until I'm done or someone else is done. That's why it is such a universal and accessible visual art process. Because, you know, when I give workshops, I see how there just seems to be this sense of relief and people come into their fullness. And you know, this glowing sense of their presence, that's what keeps me going and teaching it. If I didn't feel that happening in the people, it's not just about what the pictures are that people create. It's that people get back to and more resonant with, you know, their deeper self and soul space through doing process. And that's really the outcome of the process, is a transformation in the person. And then if you happen to have some drawings that you like, that's wonderful. You celebrate that. But primarily, if you can use the process to transform your own being, that's the primary art form.
And so as you're letting go and you're releasing, so it, when you get done with a series of paintings you do, do you feel tired or do you feel at a state of peace and balance, or does it vary on what it is that you actually moved out?
Yeah, I mean, I would think it would vary. I can't speak for other people. It varies from person to person, from time to time. But generally speaking, I wouldn't say that it's tired. It's more like when I do a really intensive series, and again, for me, it's more in service. Like when I do an inner portrait, which is I'll do a sitting with someone and do a series for them, not for me. So this is an intuitive process. And in a sense, that's my the hardest work, even though it's like the easiest drawings. So it's like a workout. How do you feel after a workout? You don't feel tired. You feel kind of like a relief and like you just had a good workout. That's how I feel, actually, after I've done an intense touch drawing series. Like you just went for a good run or something, you know?
I think of you at the different conferences and the different presenters who talk about different topics. So if you listen to, for instance, a speaker and you have several pieces of paper next to you, and then the next person comes on and you have several pieces of paper next to you, I'm simplifying it. Do you follow the theme of each presenter and then pull together one collective painting, or because I know there must be a way that they all interjoin, that they look like they're part of one.
I do a series for each presenter. So it depends on how long they're talking. You know, if it's when I'm drawing in that kind of setting, if it's a 20-minute talk, there might be two or maybe three drawings. If it's an hour-long talk, there could be eight drawings. So it's a series for the presenter if they talk long enough. And then I try to keep track of who's who, and I do have, if anyone's interested, a gallery of interpretive touch drawing on my website, in my touch drawing galleries, where once you open that one little gallery, you'll see hundreds and hundreds of drawings. And in many of them, I do actually label the person who I was drawing during. And there's, you know, a whole lot of work at putting those online. But so it's like each presenter that has their content, there's a series that tracks their talk. And, you know, ideally, if I had someone sitting next to me and taking notes, which there's been one setting in which I've had that happen, where someone put together these notebooks with my drawing and notes on what the person was saying, and that was so wonderful because you can look back at it later and be like, oh, wow, I get it. There's an expression of exactly what was being said, but in a poetic way, not like a note-taking way, but a poetic expression. From the content that the person was covering.
Wow, what a great idea to have a narrative or almost like a poem on the side.
It is, and it's just a matter of the work involved with getting someone else to help with something like that. It's sort of the ideal way for me. And you know, But, you know, otherwise I think they hold their own just as images in a more universal sense as well. So I feel like the body of work that's come out of my sitting in these conferences has been just tapping the field of this collective evolving culture and images that can also just stand on their own, expressing it in a more universal way, many aspects of this emergent culture. So they can stand on their own as well, because I am motivated to just use these settings just to find inspiration as well. So there's the both levels of it, as it lines up exactly with what the person is saying, and also that, wow, here's an image that's powerful that came out of drawing in this setting.
Mm-hmm. So it does just kind of give me... sometimes maybe words can kind of offset it. I mean, when
can limit it,
right. Art,
Yeah, exactly.
Art in and of itself is so expansive.
Right, so they do stand on their own in that way. And, you know, I also go out in nature and I draw. I love to draw on the beach. You know, there's all kinds of different ways. The interpretive, I call it interpretive touch drawing when I draw when people are speaking or performing. But that's just like one branch of the way I use the process. And I mentioned the inner portraits, which for me is really one of the deeper ways, deeper than drawing for speakers, is to just sit in someone's presence. And I actually do this over Skype now. Sit in someone's presence, kind of take them in through a dyad gazing meditation, and then go to my drawing board. And usually I'll draw for about an hour and a half without really looking at them again. And it's like opening to there's, you know, we open a shared field, a shared soul field, and they, you know, they have given permission for us to be in this together by their wanting to do it. And in that shared soul field, you know, I've dedicated the drawings I'll do will be significant, you know, for this person. And once I've started, I just don't look up, and I just, every time there's another, I put a new piece of paper on the drawing board, I go like, I have no idea what to do. It's like this funny voice in me that goes, I have no idea. And then I'll feel just a little impulse. And often it is, again, body. It's like, oh, my arm goes in this direction. So it's like I am feeling them inside of me, you know.
Wow.
And the soul level of that person inside of me, and I draw from me, but it's in a situation where we are more merged. And I'll just, yeah, draw usually about an hour and a half for a full session. And, you know, it might be 12 to 16 drawings. And then they can live with them and create with them and write from them and, you know, use them for their own creative and soul reflective process.
Oh, how beautiful. Do you get to know the person? I know this may be a redundant but I imagine
no,
you really
it's,
get to know.
It's in a different manner. It's not like information, and I almost don't want information about them. But if I look at an inner portrait now, you know, that I have photographed, because they take the originals, but when I'm in a setting where I can photograph them, I keep track, you know, keeping the photographs. And I will look at one, and I'll go like, oh, yeah, I'll feel it's like an imprint of their being, you know. And I will just feel that person's energetic imprint when I look at those drawings. So and sort of just recognize that. And I recently, did put up a gallery presentation on inner portraits on my website, because it was all I had was a teeny little like single page. It didn't really give people a sense of it. But, you know, that's also on my website now, where you can go and look more carefully at examples of that work.
And your website is touchdrawing.com.
Yes, it's a very full website. There's journeys you can take down whole other branches and then whole other branches, and I just keep working on it and trying to have it be clear. But it's a deeply developed website. Yeah, lots to explore. Mm-hmm. Lots of images.
Well, what a beautiful way. What a beautiful way it would be to really see the essence of someone. I think about how there's how there's so much polarity right now, and, you know, the color of one's skin, or the trauma that has been unresolved, and what a profound difference it would make, my sense, if we looked so much deeper into who the essence of someone was rather than the superficial color of skin, color of eyes.
There is a video floating around online that I really relate to in relation to this, and it's some video where they set up for strangers to gaze into each other's faces for maybe 5 minutes. And they, you know, they show little vignettes of that. And when we go to that place, which is so scary for people, just gazing at another being, just, you know, with no expectation, being together, seeing each other's face, we just, the barriers, those barriers really break down, and you're with another being, you know, just a soul, a being. And I love that video that's floating around, if anyone gets to see that, because that's, I know that I experience that when I do an inner portrait with somebody. And just, you might just, it's a lot of, you know, it's, people can feel a little afraid to look without talking. And look without trying to smile or have expression. But if we can just give ourselves, you know, 5 minutes of just being with another person visually, a whole other level of our being can become accessible to each other. If we are there with one simple practice, I think that would be such a helpful. I mean, imagine. Let's just imagine for a moment if the Democrats and Republicans could just sit, you know, a Democrat and a Republican in, you know, the House of Representatives or the Senators, you know, if they could ever do any of these practices together where they're just just looking at one another and just being, you know.
Wow.
What a difference that could make. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On so many levels. What is the name of the video? Do you remember offhand? Or?
Oh, no. I don't know the name.
Okay.
It was
something
floating
about
around. I'm not sure who did it, but it's where they just set up for people to, for strangers. You know, the heading is something to do with strangers looking at each other or strangers meeting each other or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go from there. So that I mentioned in the beginnings of our interview that you have done soul cards. Can you talk a little bit about what your soul cards are and how you came up with those?
Sure. Let's see. I had been creating my touch drawings, you know, from 1974. They gradually became more embodied, more colorful, more imagistic. And the body of work was developing sort of into the 90s, and I wasn't sure what to do with it. And one friend suggested to me, why don't you do a deck? And, you know, over a couple of years, I think, every now and then, she didn't even live near us anymore, but sometimes she'd say, when are you going to do your deck? And I go like, huh? What do you mean? I don't want to jump on the card deck bandwagon. And but one day I just thought, well, okay, let me just try and see what it would look like. And I took photographs. This was 1995 or 94, so we're talking about photographs and film and prints. And I had a pile of prints of drawings. Color, they were colored. You know, they had more development in them. And I think I took about 120 drawings or so, 150 drawings. And I just had a stack of them. And I had a magical thing where I showed them to somebody who I just met and who had just thrown away, given away. He did readings with people. I didn't even know that, using a tarot deck. He had just given it away that day. And I handed him my pile of photographs. This is Will McGreal. And he was just blown away. And I said, I don't know. Could this be a deck? It was that new. And he took them. He says, let me take them. Let me use them. And so he started using them as an intuitive reader in sessions with people, and I just kept getting the feedback from him that I have to do the deck. Yes, do the deck. So that was my market research. And it all sort of the energy of it came in very clear and strong, and I published the Soul Cards in 1995, and it's a tricky thing, I'll tell you. It's a very tricky thing. To this day, I'm not sure how I managed to have it work to publish independently and really get things out into the bookstores, but the Soul Cards are still selling. You know, they're still,
wow.
I'm reprinting right now. I'm reprinting both decks, Soul Cards 1, Soul Cards 2, and I'm actually out of stock on Soul Cards 1. So until the printing comes in and, you know, maybe next month. So they seem to just have a life of their own. So these are images that I've created that people can project on. It's that simple, really.
Oh,
and so that's what
yeah.
sets them apart from the other decks, which are conceptual systems with books that people refer to. And generally people pick the card, in most decks, they pick the card so that they know what chapter of a book to refer to and go read something. That's pretty much, you know, what happens with a lot of decks. And there is no book of meanings for these. You have to trust yourself, which is what's scary for some people about this deck. And there's a range of feelings from, you know, lighthearted and inspired to kind of contracted and in pain. I tried to select images that had a full spectrum to really honor the full spectrum of human feeling. So you can simply choose a card, you know, look at it. You know, you might ask a question before you do, and let the universe give you a response. And it's but it's your interpretation. So you learn to trust your own experience. You don't have to go to a book and have it tell you what it means. You can't. It doesn't exist. So you have to trust your own response. And I think it helps people learn to listen to their inner wisdom by saying, okay, well, what do I see in this? How does it relate to my life and my question that I just asked? And the magic of it is the synchronicity of how the right card just happens to come when people pick. And that's totally out of my hands. I created the images, but it does feel like they're the universe likes them, likes to use them because of the experiences people have of just an image that speaks so directly to their issue being the one that they choose out of 120 images in the two decks now. And some, you know, there's a lot of stories about someone, you know, the same image that they choose over and over again when they're asking a question comes up and things like that. So I'm sort of humbled and in awe of the fact that they seem to be, have become an instrument of synchronicity. And
well, and what perfect timing now, especially when it's almost like we've lost the option in some ways to look outside of ourselves for the answers. I don't think it ever was there, but it's not as accessible necessarily being forced to look inside and recognize we have that. And so what a gift it is that you offer these cards, which brings me also into knowing that you've created the 5 Soul Touch coloring journals. Are those part of what the soul cards are, or can you talk a little bit about what your coloring journals are?
Yeah, I would love to. I see them as standing right in the middle between the soul cards and touch drawing as a process. So they're like the soul cards in that they're evocative images, and you can choose one to work, choose one that, you know, and let it speak to you. But they are more active. The relationship to them is more active than the soul cards because you fill the image out with your own coloring, and they're much more accessible than touch drawing because that takes getting the tools, learning how to do it. It's kind of a big deal. So they're a more accessible way to have a creative, dynamic interaction with these archetypal images that have come through me and to be able to fill them out and bring them more fully alive. They're very different from the other coloring books. And so I think, again, just like soul cards pushed an edge compared to other card decks, the coloring books do the exact same thing. Because it's not like there's nice little shapes that you just get into this repetitive pattern of filling in. There are flowing forms, and you can add to it. There's room to add words. There's room to add patterns. It's not so obvious how to just sit down and color with flat color and just pick a color and fill in a shape. You come into creative interaction with the images, and I get to see some of the ones that people are coloring on my Facebook coloring journal group, and it blows me away. Actually, I go like, oh, you're all doing a better job coloring your drawings than my drawings than I am. I truly am blown away when I see what people do with them. It's amazing. And so it's a way, in a way, I let go of my attachment to my images because they don't exist as only my art when people use them in this way. And one of the things I'm exploring now is how to get them into service settings where they can really be used. There's someone interested who does a soul, soul collage card. She's one of the trainers, and she's interested in how people can use them when they're creating soul collage as part of their soul collage. I might have a connection with a hospice person. How can these coloring books maybe be brought into a setting where people are doing grief work or a family that, you know, when you're sitting around in a hospice setting, you've got a lot of time. Can they be brought into settings where the family's given the books and there's something they can do that's a little more soulfully engaging than just sitting around and waiting? So there's a vast potential that I'm just barely begun to tap about how they can be used. Yeah.
Wow. I would like to just move back a little bit because I've talked to other artists who have such a connection to the artwork. It's almost like a possession. And sometimes for those of us that have published books, it's like my book and it's going to be a gift to the world. I wonder what it was like for you to actually release the coloring journals without the colors that you had put into it, because talk about the ultimate letting go and surrendering, and that comment you made when you looked at others who you thought, wow, they did a better job. Those weren't your words, but what was it like for you to release it out into the world like that?
Well, you know, the idea came to me in such a strong way to do it that I couldn't not do it. So the steps of creating it for me were an incredible harvest of going into these, I have thousands of images. I want them to be out there in the world serving. So I got to go through my images and harvest. I found these different themes. That's why there are five books. One is opening. I found in my work, just looking at my work on photographs where I had, you know, I had archived them photographically, and I would just organize them. Well, these are sort of similar, and I realized that these were images about various forms of love. So that became the book Opening to Love. Then there were images that were about, seemed to be all about the creative process. That became Creative Awakening, and images of relating with nature, and that became Fullness of Life, and images that were more internal, that was listening within. And all these feminine images became gifts of the feminine, just to harvest and put them into those categories, take them out of their context and put them in each of those bodies of subject theme, was incredibly satisfying for me. I didn't really know how I would feel about having people color them. I was a little afraid, actually, but it felt like you have to do it.
Yeah.
It's just happening. Mm-hmm. And but when I started, then in the latter phase, I was just trying to get some people to do example coloring so I could put them on one page. You can see the same image colored by different people. And when I started getting those back, I breathed a sigh of relief because it felt good to me to see them. I got excited when I saw them. So it was sort of an unknown, but that's what I find. It's like, wow, the images just come alive. And actually, for a while, I couldn't color my own drawings. I was afraid to start coloring my own drawings again after the books were out.
Wow.
I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I can color my drawings. I don't know if I can do it. And so I was thinking too much about other people's colorings, but now I've sort of let go of that, and I'm just back to whoever I am when I, you know, work on a drawing. But, yeah, there was a time where I was, afraid of coloring my own drawings. Not a big, deep thing, but maybe there was a few months of self-consciousness about coloring my own drawings because I was seeing all these wonderful, interesting versions that I never would have thought of. If anyone wants to go to the Soul Touch Coloring Journal Facebook group and you just kind of scroll through there, and it's pretty amazing. So I have things to learn from seeing what other people do.
And isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
Isn't it beautiful, really, to know the uniqueness yet the similarities of all of us?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
the comment you made really is, how do we accentuate the best that we are within ourselves? And watching the comparison, I know, speaking from self, it's an endless practice not to look outside myself and compare myself to others. And
right.
what a gift you gave by surrendering to that. And then the candidness of saying, wow, where am I in all this?
This
is really
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's been a very interesting process. It just doesn't fit any categories that I know. And that's but that's exciting too. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in the next couple of minutes, one, it's been wonderful to connect with you. I think we've talked
yeah,
more
it's great to talk.
Today
yeah.
than we have
yeah.
in a while. What are
I know.
Some of your leading edge projects right now that you have going on? If you could just take a minute or so to speak of that.
Well, one is to find a way to support other people I encourage people to facilitate the process of touch drawing. I cannot be the only person who shares it. And so I keep putting it off, and I feel like I can't put it off much longer. How can I develop some online forums and maybe live video? I've explored things in the past, but to really make something that works and is functional to support other touch drawing facilitators, to support people in different fields to connect with each other, because touch drawing can be used in so many different ways. So that's one of my edges, is to get beyond procrastination and, you know, get that happening. And exploring some new social media ways of getting my images out, like maybe creating little animation videos with series of drawings. And my music. You know, this doing these sound baths. When I'm doing a workshop in New York later in April, and it's besides doing them locally, I always do music while I teach, always. But when I do the sound bath, I come out more fully in my voice. It's a bigger, more powerful thing, and I have now added to my day-long workshop an evening sound bath. So I'm sort of putting that out more publicly that I do this. So
wow,
that's
good.
Pretty exciting. Yeah. I love
so
doing
people,
it.
And if people are interested in seeing perhaps how they can get involved, the best way to contact you is touchdrawing.com.
Absolutely. The website, you know, if you go to the contact, there's an email address there. I always look at the emails, answer questions, things like that. There's a schedule of my workshops, Los Angeles, New York, the Northwest coming up, and lots of galleries of images and videos about touch drawing, so you can actually see me do a touch drawing. If you're kind of curious, you didn't quite get it, if you go to the little video link, you'll see several videos. So, like I said, the website is extensive, and you can really
good.
Kind of journey and explore there. Yes. But I always answer questions.
Thank you, Deborah.
So,
thank you,
Catherine.
Thank you for taking the time to be here, and thank you, dear listeners, for listening in. I feel inspired to leave you with a beautiful Cherokee prayer. Oh, Great Spirit, help me always to speak the truth quietly, to listen with an open mind when others speak, and to remember the peace that may be found in silence. And with that, going inward to find your own creativity, your own source, your own love. And love each other and be kind. Thank you, Deborah. Take care.
Thank you, Catherine, so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.